This is Well Women Radio, about women's health and wellness for everyone's well-being. How does being a woman determine your health and well-being? Does health and other policy adequately address systemic problems and root causes of ill health? Well Women Radio looks at health from a woman-centered perspective, examining the biological, psychological, environmental, and social factors affecting the health and well-being of women and families. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi. 20 years ago this week, for the first time in our nation's history, tens of millions of people gained the right to take job-protected leave to address inevitable health and caregiving needs. The implementation of the Family and Medical Leave Act, also known as FMLA, marked the beginning of a new norm in this country, and the culture of our nation and its workplaces have forever been changed as a result. Since 1993, the FMLA has been used by mothers, fathers, spouses, children, and people across the country who needed a limited amount of time away from their jobs to recover from serious illnesses, to care for new babies and for loved ones facing serious illness. An entire generation considers the 12 weeks of unpaid, job-protected leave provided by the FMLA a fundamental right, a testament to its tremendous success. Today on the show, we'll hear about the success of the FMLA, as well as some of its limitations. My guests include two women, Anne Marie from Pennsylvania and Tammy from Rhode Island, who will share their personal stories, as well as Ellen Bravo, Executive Director of Family Values at Work. Stay tuned for Well Woman Radio next. First, I talked to Anne Marie in Pennsylvania, whose sister Joan was unexpectedly diagnosed with terminal late-stage gynecological cancer. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, Anne Marie.
Oh, no, thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate it.
Well, can you give us a summary of what happened and how your life changed and bring us up to speed on what happened with Joan?
Oh, sure. Well, exactly like you said, my sister was diagnosed with unexpected late-stage gynecologic cancer. And as happens often with cancer, Joanne didn't get better. She got worse. And she got worse very quickly. And Joanne was not married. She didn't have any children. Our father passed away many years ago, and our mother is a senior citizen right now with many medical conditions of her own. So Joanne got very sick very quickly, and she needed someone to help her, take care of her, get her to her chemotherapy and radiation appointments. And it just the workload just got busier and busier. We had critical care nurses come into the home to help train me to help take care of Joanne. Working full-time, of course, was a little bit hard, and with two kids of my own, I applied for family medical leave at my company. Now, because here in Pennsylvania, we don't have a state law, we look to the federal law for guidance. And because Joanne is a sibling and not a parent, spouse, or child, like the law says, I was immediately turned down for family medical leave. So I thought and I thought and I thought. I'm like, okay, well, there's got to be something out there special for my sister's case. So I appealed the decision under a premise called in loco parentis, which means in the place of a parent, you know, especially since Joanne had really no one to take care of her. But again, you know, unfortunately, I was denied and turned down. So, Giovanna, it was at that point I made that horrible decision, but I would make it over and over 100 times more. I voluntarily quit my job to help take care of my sister until she passed away. I was at my company for 17 years. They were a wonderful, family-friendly company, but it was something that I needed to do at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I made that tough decision, but I'd make it 100 times more. So I did leave my work, you know, and we helped take care of Joanne until she passed away.
So that obviously was a very difficult decision to make and a difficult thing to go and do to take care of your sister. And then when she did pass away, you didn't have a job to go back to.
No, and you know, it's only fair. It is a business to run, and they do need people at work to do their work. And it was hard to miss time to get her to her appointments. She had chemotherapy and radiation, you know, several days a week, and she was very ill. And, you know, we were up many a late night taking care of her and her IV therapy. So, yes, it did get hard, and I can understand the business's position, but at the same time, it was a personal decision that I had to make myself, and I would do it 100 times more if I had to, but a lot of people out here in Pennsylvania are not that lucky, and they need their jobs. And making a decision like that for them would be financially devastating. So we're trying here in Pennsylvania desperately to create a provision to the family medical leave here in Pennsylvania to include special cases like my sister's case, for example, siblings who aren't married and have no children. So we're working really hard. I approached my state representative with the idea, and it's been a rough road. It's been about 4 years, and we have not had much success yet getting it passed, but again, we reintroduce it every session, and I'm actually getting ready for a hearing this September with the Labor Relations Committee that we're going to try to plead our case again and see if we can get some movement on this bill now. It's a bill in the House and the Senate here in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so it would be a state law that would allow for a little bit of an expansion of FMLA in Pennsylvania.
Yes, you know, it's a very conservative expansion. It's nothing, you know, out of the ordinary. It just simply looks to expand the definition of who we can take protected leave from our jobs for to include special family members like my sister Joanne, who didn't have anyone else to take care of her. Because we often thought, if I didn't do it, what would have happened to her? Would we have, you know, had to put her in, you know, care of the state or in a home or something like that? So there's many advantages to this bill, you know, whether it be for the employee, for the employer, you know, and there's a cost savings factor to it. So we hope that it's, you know, a bill that will be looked favorably on and hopefully get some movement and eventually get passed into law.
And Anne-Marie, how long did you go without working to take care of your sister?
Well, sadly, in our case, my sister was diagnosed in a very late stage. So she passed away within 8 months. But I did end up leaving my position probably about 2 to 3 months before she passed away.
Okay. So you had those last few months full time with her, which must have meant a lot to you.
It did. It did. And I would never change it. Again, I do miss my company and work and wonderful coworkers. However, again, it's a decision that people that you'd be really surprised. A lot of people out there have come up to me and said, I don't know what we're going to do. We're in the same position as you. You know, you were. I sure hope the law changes. And you'd be really surprised to hear how many people fall into an unusual category like that, because no law can define who's family anymore. There's death and divorce and separation and, you know, single parent family. So family takes on a whole new definition in today's world.
It does. And Emery, were you able to find another job after that?
Well, I have been working part-time. I've been keeping myself busy, you know, doing volunteer projects. We had a lot of gynecologic cancer awareness functions in memory of my sister. We had trees planted. You know, we try to keep ourselves busy. I do work part-time, but in the other time that I have, you know, I do try to show a good example to my children and, you know, help them volunteer as well and stress the importance of good checkups and good health.
Well, Anne-Marie, I want to thank you for sharing your story, and good luck to you in Pennsylvania with the state law there.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope to have a success story to share with you soon.
Next, I spoke with Tammy in Rhode Island. Tammy, I understand you're a mother who has struggled to take care of your 20-year-old autistic son, who and this causes you to miss work. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your story?
Oh, yes. We're a working family here in Rhode Island. We are raising two sons right now, Joey, who's 20, as you mentioned, and we also have a 9-year-old, Stephen Jr. Joey's actually medically fragile and cognitively delayed. A lot of his diagnoses include autism, hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, and a seizure disorder. And it's Joey's hydrocephalus that had caused him to be hospitalized in October of 2012, where during this hospital stay, he had to undergo brain surgery and actually suffered some complications of that surgery. So it made for a really long hospital stay and a long recovery time that my husband and I, you know, had to be integral part of because of Joey's limitations. When it comes to his communication, cognitively, Joey functions somewhere between a 4 and a 7-year-old. He cannot be easily understood by others. He does have words, but if you're not around him a lot, you really don't understand what he's saying. And he also doesn't understand about his medical conditions. So therefore, Steve and I, my husband, we have to be with him at all times during his illnesses. So this creates lots of time away from work for me and my husband. Steve was able to take a few weeks off to be with me during Joey's recovery, but he had to return to work because we had to keep our heads above water when it came to bills and all of that. So a lot of his care in the home had to be actually coordinated. I had to learn how to dress and pack open wounds, coordinate a lot of physical therapy and occupational therapy and visiting nurse visits. And Joey also had to undergo weekly blood work at that time.
Okay, and so you actually took time off work, unpaid, using FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act?
That was all we had here and in existence in Rhode Island then. Thank God for TCI now. It does give me a little bit of peace of mind, but in October of 2012, we did not have TCI here, which I could only have FMLA, and that did not offer my family any kind of financial help. So, you know, it was fall turning into winter, and my younger son's birthday, and all of this was happening while Joey was ill. So it did create lots of strain on our household because our household does function with two incomes. So you have to make those decisions on what to pay on which bill, and that caused us to have lots of stress during that time on top of worrying about our son and his health at the time.
Okay, and I understand you did take off several weeks, up to like 10 weeks off?
A total of 10 weeks. It was a lot longer than we had thought because of the complications Joey suffered.
And then you mentioned something, TCI. Can you explain what that
was? Yes. That is the, it's the Temporary Caregivers Insurance Law, and it is actually part of our temporary disability insurance law that we have here in Rhode Island. It's an expansion of it. And what TCI is going to provide for us now that, you know, governor has passed it and it's now law, beginning on January 1st of 2014, should this ever happen to families like mine again, you'll be able to have 4 weeks of paid time off to care for your sick loved one.
Okay, so that's a state law that enhances FMLA and adds the paid part, which is so critical for so many families.
Absolutely. It was such a big victory for working families here in Rhode Island. I was so happy when I heard that it had passed. It's going to mean so many benefits to so many families. And it is even including, you know, being from the early childhood field. I'm really excited, too, because it's going to allow families that have just newly adopted or have taken in a new foster child to have time to bond with their children as well over those 4 weeks.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations on that. That's a big win. And Tammy, good luck to you and your son, Joey, with his health. And thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
Oh, anytime. Anytime. I'm happy to be part of this. Very proud to be a representative for families.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Well Woman Radio, a show about women's health and wellness for everyone's well-being. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi, and today on the show, we're exploring the link between family-friendly policies and healthy women and families. Next, I spoke with Ellen Bravo, Executive Director of Family Values at Work Consortium, a network of coalitions working for and winning policies such as paid sick days and family leave insurance. Under Bravo's strategic leadership, the Family Values at Work network has expanded to 21 cities and states and achieved unprecedented victories, passing paid sick days and family leave insurance. I understand you are Executive Director of Family Values at Work Consortium, which is a network of coalitions working for policies such as paid sick days and family leave insurance, right?
That's correct, yes.
What is the landscape right now? How are we doing in the country on these policies?
We just celebrated the 20th anniversary of implementation of the Family and Medical Leave Act. And our slogan for this was celebrate and expand. There's a lot to celebrate. It's been used more than 100 million times, and it really was life-saving for many people, knowing that they had a job and health insurance to come back to, and particularly people who live in states where they've gone beyond the federal and either allowed people to use any paid time they'd accrued for the unpaid purpose of the leave, or where they'd actually created a family leave insurance fund. So that's great. The problem, 40% of the population of the of workers are left out, excluded from the FMLA, because it only covers people who work at, for a company of at least 50, who've been on the job for at least a year, who work at least 25 hours a week. The definition of family is very narrow. It doesn't include siblings, for example, and it doesn't include grandparents. In non-marriage equality states, it doesn't include same-sex partners, unmarried domestic partners anywhere. And it doesn't cover routine illness. The good news is most kids don't get leukemia, but they all get strep throat and pink eye, and that's not covered. And, of course, it's unpaid. So for many people, we know from a survey that was done recently that 2.5 times as many people who were eligible for leave and needed leave didn't take it because they couldn't afford, mainly because they couldn't afford the time. We know that lots of people went back to work too soon. Disproportionately, that's women, but it's also many men. We have to, you know, do better. And the good news is we know what it looks like. We know it works. We know it's good for business and the health of the community as well as for workers and their families. And that's what we're setting out to do.
Okay, so let's break that down a little bit because you mentioned quite a few different components. And it's very interesting to me that only 40% of, or rather 40% of the workforce is not covered by the protections
even,
of this
right,
law.
Even by this law, which itself is fairly modest. I mean, compared to the rest of the world, I think you know we're one of only three countries that don't have a paid leave program. And it's not just our counterparts in the industrialized world. Many very poor and underdeveloped countries, Kenya, Mongolia, are way ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can do better than that. This isn't the nation we set out to be.
If it's good for business, which I know there's a lot of research that shows that paid leave is good for business. Why is there such pushback from business or from policymakers to go ahead and implement or expand FMLA to be paid and to cover
more
people?
That's a good question. There's a couple of important answers. One is the role of lobbyists who claim to speak for all employers, but who, of course, don't. They mainly represent multi-billion-dollar corporations who pay those lobbyists millions of dollars just to keep any regulations off the books. You know, of course, and what that gets us is the BP oil spill and the fire, you know, at the fertilizer plant in Texas and mine disasters and the Wall Street fiasco. It's the proper role of government to say there needs to be a certain things, you know, that you can't do, and you got to watch out for the safety and health of the nation. And so these are common sense rules that we need to apply to everyone. Now, the smart employers are already doing it, and they know that it's a good thing to do, and that it helps their bottom line, and they tell us that. And the research reinforces it.
And so the 40% of the workforce that's not covered are probably people who actually really do need the protection.
Of course. So, you know, think about this, that always the majority of people who need this coverage are the least likely to have it.
Right.
Take paid sick days. Of low-wage workers, three-quarters don't earn a single paid sick day. You know, they talk about how women trade income for flexibility, but the truth is that low-income jobs are the least flexible. And people are often fired just for being a good mother or following doctor's orders.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to change. And here's the thing that's really important. This is just about family economics. It's about big picture economics. What the economy needs is for people to have money in their pockets to spend. That's what small businesses say is the number one thing they need is more sales. And so all our business partners will say, hey, the workers in my community are also my customers. I need them to be able to keep their job and keep their paycheck so they can come to my fill-in-the-blank restaurant, shoe shop, mm-hmm. auto repair store. It's also a public health issue. You know, more than half of noroviruses get spread because of infected workers who have to go to their job, or they, again, will be forced with having to choose between keeping the lights on, feeding their kids, you know, or going into debt and poverty.
Okay, and if you've just joined us, you're listening to Well Woman Radio, a show about women's health and wellness for everyone's well-being. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi, and today I'm speaking with Ellen Bravo, who heads up the, and I've just lost it.
Family Values at Work.
Family Values at Work. And Ellen, we're talking about the Family Medical Leave Act because it's the 20th anniversary of the act this week. And it's kind of surprising to me that it's only 20 years old. And at the same time, that's a long time. So it's interesting. Clearly,
it's interesting. It took us so long, and it took us 9 years to pass it.
Right.
And we were way behind the rest of the world when we passed it, and it was so modest to begin with. And now 20 years have passed without any major changes. There's been a couple of important ads, like covering military families, giving them a longer time, 26 weeks, to care for a wounded returning warrior or to help with deployment issues if you have to take care of kids or something.
Okay, so some minor expansions, but not too much.
And here's the thing. I'm happy to say that both President Clinton, who was the president who signed it, and our current President Obama have spoken out about the need to improve it. And, you know, what President Clinton said is laws were never meant to be forever. You always look to see do they need to be improved. And he talked about how what do we need as a society? We want people to succeed at their jobs and to succeed with their loved ones. And really, if they have to sacrifice one in order to do the other, it's a tremendous loss for our whole nation and for every one of us.
Well, and something we haven't touched on, which is very important to go into, is maternity leave. And so
yes.
When we're talking about caregiving and taking time off to be with a loved one, a lot of women would like to use FMLA for maternity leave, and actually that's what a lot of people think of when they think of FMLA, is being able to take time off to be with a newborn baby. But this does not help a lot of new moms because it's unpaid. I mean,
exactly.
I don't know anyone, really, who could just take 3 months off work unpaid, actually.
Exactly. So I'm looking at this cartoon where a woman is saying to her boss, I'd like paid maternity, and he says, leave, and he's pointing to the door.
Oh.
And for many people, that's what leave policy is. So either there's none or you get no pay. Only 11% of employers provide paid parental leave. So here's the problem. Half of all women in the workforce don't get a penny of wages while they're out on leave. And of those, the half that do get some pay, mostly it's vacation or mm-hmm. sick time. Now, you know, it was a great joy to have children, but it's certainly not a vacation. And you actually need that vacation for after they're born and mm-hmm. for the other toddler who's wondering what this new creature is doing in their world. So we have to make it real that people can take the leave and afford it. You know, it's one of the main triggers of a poverty spell. What a word, poverty spell. It's having a baby. What should be a joyous time often leaves people with tremendous debt and even poverty and even bankruptcy. So, and then there's men. You know, there's lots of men. Babies don't just have mothers in many cases, and those fathers, which society is saying to those fathers, be responsible, they say we want to be, many, many of them. And yet they would be punished at work if they took the time, or the family would take a financial hit it can't afford. And in states where we've passed family leave insurance, we have men say to us, you know, men are looked, fathers are looked on as a spare part. It's been huge for me that I can bond with my babies.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to this insurance fund, all fathers should be able to do that. We agree. And even people who aren't parents have parents who may at some time need care, and people should be able to do that, again, without sacrificing both their own financial security and hurting the economy at the same time.
Okay, and Ellen, you mentioned at the beginning that your slogan for the 20th anniversary is celebration and expansion, and definitely folks are celebrating, you know, having this law in place. But what is there hope for expansion at the federal level, and what would that expansion look like? Are we looking at a national paid leave insurance program?
Yes. And, you know, the reason that I have hope is the growing movement around the country, the excitement of wins that we've won it in three states, most recently Rhode Island, which very importantly includes job security for anyone who uses it, that they can go back to their same job, and the fact that we have champions. So on Capitol Hill, there are people like Senator Gillibrand from New York, Representative Rosa DeLauro in the House, who are preparing to introduce a bill that would create a national family leave insurance fund. And there are a number of other states. Connecticut and Vermont have both passed a task force to study the issue. New York State has a very active campaign and hopes to win next year. The state of Washington already passed a fund and is hoping to win funding for it because it has not yet been implemented. And the president put money in his budget to help create competitive grants for states to experiment with these kinds of funds,
mm-hmm.
and the Senate Appropriations Committee for the first time included it in their budget. So I have hope because there's more and more of a public outcry and awareness that these things are possible. We know what kind of change we need and a demand for it, and also it's politically hugely popular. We have polling that shows that candidates who support these kinds of policies are much more likely to get the votes of key segments of the population. Even the majority of Republicans
mm-hmm.
support these policies, certainly the majority of independents, overwhelming majorities of, you know, women, African Americans, Latinos, unmarried women, et cetera.
Okay. Well, Ellen, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for being on the program today. And
my pleasure, and I want your listeners to go to familyvaluesatwork.org and sign up. We'd love to plug you in to these movements. We are the ones we are waiting for. We are the ones who are going to make this change. So I appreciate so much what you're doing.
Ellen Bravo, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank my guests, Ellen Bravo, Anne-Marie Pearson, and Tammy Russo. For more information and links, go to collectiveactionstrategies.com. Join me every second Friday of the month and mark your calendar for September 13th to tune in to Well Woman Radio. Well Woman Radio is produced at the studios at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our engineer today was Ramon Garcia. Theme music composed and performed by Paul Presley. You can find a podcast of the show at prx.org. I'm Giovanna Rossi for Well Woman Radio.